Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. I'm on the phone with my co-hostess, Misty Hall. Good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm great, Bonnie. Good evening to you. How are you today?
I'm doing good. And you're in Kentucky right now, right?
I'm in my beautiful state of Kentucky, enjoying the fall weather.
In your old Kentucky home, right?
It is my Kentucky home, that's for sure.
And I'm in Philadelphia, so we're not too close to each other, but we're also having beautiful weather here. So welcome to all of our listeners. Straight Wives Talk Show talks about the issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay man or to a bisexual man, which to me means that they're going to be gay sooner or later. But I know a lot of people feel bisexuality is controversial, and some people don't even believe in it, but some people believe that somebody can be bisexual. What do you think, Misty?
Well, of course, I don't believe absolute on anything. I think there are exceptions to everything. However, I will say, as many of the women that I've coached, and with my own experience with my now ex-husband, I think the gay men that tend to marry that are not comfortable in being gay themselves, you know, it's hard to admit that and hard to be that when, you know, you live in a culture such as theirs that really doesn't have a place for them sometimes. I think the gay men that tend to marry, that's where they're tiptoe, I think, into that world is to try to say they're bisexual, because I think for some reason some of the men can accept that a little easier, because oftentimes, as you and I have said, Bonnie, they do love the women they're married to, but often not in a way that a husband and wife would love each other. So I know when when you discover that your spouse is gay or he says he's bisexual and you married them not knowing that, it's a crisis either way. And I
think
that's,
you know what, even if they're bisexual, I think it really comes down to what you're willing to live with. You know, and always never knowing when your husband's going out, what he's going to be doing, or who he's going to be meeting. And the fact that he is bisexual, the fact he's attracted to men, that definitely has to take its toll on your self-esteem. And that's one of the issues we're going to really be talking about tonight. If anybody would like to call into our show, please get a pencil ready, and I'll give you the call-in number if you'd like to discuss your story or ask us any questions, and we'll give you our best advice, and we're more than happy to share that with you. We're at area code 646-716-4893, and I'll read that one more time for you, area code 646-716-4893, and we really do appreciate when women call in, because I think we learn so much from each other. And from you sharing your story, and of course you can do it anonymously, nobody has to know your name, but I think that people can feel your pain when they reach out and they hear the stories that are the same stories that they're living. And even though all of our stories are so different, Misty, aren't they all the same in the end?
Oh my goodness, absolutely. The crisis that you go through upon discovery, it's the same. There's so many common threads, and in the end it's the same. You're going through a grieving process is what I call it. And I like the term you use, the gay husband recovery. You absolutely go through a grieving process.
Right.
It's not easy.
Well, grieving is the first part of it, but then you have to go through the recovery process.
Yes.
And that's no easy process for any of you who might think that, you know, you can just get over it. As people tell you, why don't you get over it? It just doesn't happen that way.
No,
there's so
many
complexities that we have to untangle. So many issues that we have to, you know, talk about. So many things when you have residual scarring through the years, because, you know, some people just can't break away when you have children. Often you're tied to somebody for many years to come. And, you know, there's so many different issues. We talk about that sometimes, Misty. Let's talk about some of them that women have to deal with who have gay husbands that women with straight husbands don't have to deal with.
Wow.
So, for instance, let's start with the children.
Yeah, but, wow, where should we begin? There's so many complications involved. With the children, I think, I have a lot of women that I work with. Their first concern is oftentimes the children are very understanding their father is gay. But where they sometimes have trouble or sometimes they're afraid is, who do I tell? Can I tell my friends or should I tell my friends? You know, how will parents react to that? Will I still get to be friends with those kids? So, there's lots of complications in that arena. I think another major complication is that children of gay fathers go through when they're married to a straight wife is they question their own sexuality. And I think, being in this, I think that almost always happens. And not that a gay father coming out is going to make the children gay, but as you and I think we both believe the same on this, Bonnie, it does tend to run in families, so it does tend to have some type of genetic component, I feel, but because your dad comes out of the closet doesn't mean that you're absolutely gay.
No, but it doesn't mean absolutely that you won't be, because after all the years that I've working with women, I have found statistically through, studies that I've read and studies that I've done, that there's about a 10% higher chance that you will have a gay child. And
I do believe that. I believe that. And I believe it causes confusion among the children because I believe they start to question themselves. Even when they're settled into their sexuality and they're comfortable with it, when they discover dad's gay, I think they start to get a little confused sometimes.
I agree. And the other thing is that, sometimes women are having such a difficult time dealing themselves with the whole gay issue that they confuse homosexuality with their husbands and their marriages, and they lose their sense of objectivity. By the way, we do have a caller. Let's see who's calling in tonight. Hello, this is Bonnie and Misty.
Yeah, I'm just listening for now. I'll raise my hand if I'm interested in saying something. Thanks.
Go right ahead. Hello?
No, I said I'm saying I'm listening for now. If I want to make a comment,
okay,
I'll just press the one button.
Sure, no problem. So anyway, going back to what were you talking about, Misty?
We were talking about children and self-esteem of the straight wives.
Right, but we were talking about the children. Also, we just recently had a wonderful, wonderful program a few weeks ago from a young lady, and it really implored us to start this support group for children who have gay fathers, because I think that this is the most neglected segment. There's help for gay men when they want to come out to their wives. There's help for gay wives through us and other groups like the Straight Spouse Network. But many people don't realize the long-term damage that it happens to a lot of children, and as they grow into adulthood, all the issues that they have themselves. And there's really nobody addressing that, so we started our support group and our support group for adult children for gay fathers. And so if you have adult children who would like to join in with us on that in the support chat, please let me know by writing to me at bonk@aol.com. Because, once again, there are a lot of issues after we get them untangled that we don't realize that our children are going through. I think one of the problems is that we're living in a very homophobic society, and nothing has changed as far as that's concerned. Even though people are more open today than they used to be, people still discriminate against gay people. And a lot of times, if you live in certain parts of this country, it can be downright dangerous. Misty, I don't know if you read what happened in New York.
I've just heard bits and pieces of it. I haven't heard enough to comment a whole lot on it, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, I was reading about it today, and it was so tragic that this young man and his brother, were brutally beaten and raped, with a baseball bat by these anti-gay gangs. And when you read something like this, it makes you really understand more and more why people are afraid to come out. And you can't say that our society has changed so much today that it's so different than it used to be. Maybe it's more accepting in certain segments, but overall the homophobia is still there and still raging, and this was an example. These guys were both brutalized, like I say, really badly beaten, raped with a baseball bat, and this went on for a long period of time. And to me, that's why I feel that even though we've come a long way in this country as far as, you know, as far as our views on homosexuality, we still have a long way to go. And until people learn to be accepting and to be tolerant of homosexuality, this problem of, you know, gay people marrying straight people is always going to occur because a lot of gay people have trouble accepting the fact themselves that they're gay. So I think there's so many problems that come into this. But as I always say, Misty, it's a matter that people don't have a choice in their homosexuality, but they certainly do have a choice in being honest. And at least being honest with their wives, because as soon as you understand that you need to act on these gay feelings, you need to go and you need to be honest with your wife. And I know that's the hardest decision that any man is ever going to have to make. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And, you know, I go back and sometimes, you know, I work with a lot of gay wives, I go back and I ask myself, how do I wish it would have happened differently for me? And that's one of the things that often comes up in my mind is, you know, I wish my now ex-husband would have come to me and, you know, just said something like, you know, this is the hardest thing I'll ever have to tell you, that I think I may be gay, before he acted on it. It would have just made, you know, a divorce so much easier. It would have just been so much better for both of us to live authentically and be who we were. And I could have just, it would have just made things so different than how they turned out, just so different. And, you know, I wish that for any straight wife, that when their husband finds out if he's just gay, comes to them and just sits down and has that heart-to-heart talk. And it's terrible. It's like you often say, Bonnie, it may be one of the hardest things they ever do in their life. But they're just not doing their wife any favors by keeping it secret. They're not, and they're cheating themselves. Not just their wife, I think they're cheating themselves. And it's terrible. It's not easy to do.
This week I received a beautiful letter from a woman in the United Kingdom, and she told me that her husband came out to her a few months ago. And she was writing to me to thank me, and she said the reason why her husband came out to her was that he read an article on my website called Come Out to Your Wife. And after he read it, he believed that he owed her that truth. So if you don't mind, Misty, I'm just going to take a moment and read that in hopes that maybe some men are listening and maybe they'll pay attention to it. Now, you have to keep in mind that this article was written 20 years ago, nearly 20 years ago, but I think the article remains, you know, same. It says, over the last 15 years, I've worked with thousands of straight wives who learned at some point during their marriage that their husbands are gay. Through the years, members of the gay community have criticized me for taking the position that I maintain to be moral, ethical, and necessary. These words of conscience need to be heard by those of you who are gay or bisexual men married to heterosexual women. It is about truth, honesty, and commitment to the person who should be the primary focus in your life. To put it quite simply, come out to your wife. This plea is not being made out of sheer emotionalism, but rather from common sense, logic, and a sense of fair play. Marriage is the highest form of commitment a man can make with a woman. It supersedes all prior relationship and goes beyond friendship. The person you marry lives with you on a day-to-day basis and shares your life, the good times and the bad, during sickness and health, through your moments of glory and depths of despair. It is a relationship built on trust and honesty towards each other. That is not to say that every move in a marriage must be explained. Sooner or later, we all fall into the trap of making up little white lies. However, hiding your homosexuality is not exactly keeping a little secret when it plays such a big role in your life. It is living a lie. You are living a double life in two separate worlds, and the twain will never meet. There is another side of you that is totally hidden from the person who has so much trust in you and relies on you for basic honesty. There is another issue that must be mentioned. If you identify yourself as gay or bisexual, the chances are you're participating in some kind of sexual activity outside your marriage. Justify it as you may, but this is infidelity. I have often heard the standard excuses from gay husbands stating that they don't consider gay sexual encounters as cheating because it's not sex with another woman. But as the saying goes, a rose by any other name is still a rose, and a sex partner, regardless of the gender, is still an act of infidelity. I am certainly not making a value judgment on the nature of your sexuality. In fact, no one would be more delighted than I, the former wife of a gay man, if people could learn to come to terms with themselves. If you are gay and have the need to be part of the gay world, I am all for it, but not at the expense of your wife, who is sitting at home worrying day in and day out about what is wrong with her. From the wives of gay men I have spoken to and counseled, there was one common overriding feeling, the torture of not knowing what the problem was in the marriage. While the gay husband may think he is juggling his life around to please everyone, his wife increasingly senses that there is something dramatically wrong with the marriage, and yet she cannot put her finger on the problem. She feels a pull, often alienation, and keeps asking herself where she is going wrong. She finds herself buying every aid available to be more of a woman, never realizing the problem is that she is not a man. And what about the gay husband? You are suffering too, but in a different way. You often are feeling guilty. Most times when you have moments of intimacy with your wife, which you find diminishing as time passes, your body is with her, but your mind is with someone else. You are functioning and performing, but starting to resent your wife for putting you in a position to feel pushed to do something that is becoming more and more uncomfortable for you. You have to keep inventing excuses of why you're not in the mood and hoping that she will love you enough to believe them, even when she knows they are lies. You have to live in a state of hiding, hoping that no one will bump into you when you're out being yourself in fear of their revealing this information to your wife. It can't be easy living this kind of a lie. I'm not insensitive. I know how difficult it is to go to the one person in your life who probably means more to you than anyone else in the world and tell her something this explosive. I know you are taking a big chance and there is a lot of risk here. You are taking a chance of losing your wife, your children, and your security. But let's be honest, you are losing them anyway. Once your wife feels the pull, she's going to start to drift emotionally and mentally. If she can't be happy, your children won't be happy. Somewhere down the line, the family structure will break down, even if no one but you knows the real reason why. And at that point, it will be your fault because you didn't have the guts to do the right thing while you had the chance. No wife likes hearing this kind of news that you are going to tell her, and it is going to be a rough road ahead to bring things back to their natural course, if it can ever be brought back. But there are relationships that are working once the news is out. A sense of friendship and understanding can develop once honesty is on the table, perhaps not under the same roof, but throughout life. This is the most important factor when you're raising a family. Coming out is a gamble that can go either way, but almost every major decision in life is a gamble. And when you consider what the stakes are here, hopefully you'll realize it's a chance you have to take. What do you think?
Wow. I think it still fits for today, and I wish I would have heard that, or if not, I wish I would have. I wish my now ex-husband would have found that many years ago, because it's so true for me and my situation. It, like I said a little earlier, it would just have been so much easier to have picked up the pieces and move forward, both of us, even though it would have probably still ended in like it has now, both of us in different directions. It would have just been, I think, an easier healing process on my behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he came to me with that honesty and said, hey, this is, I can't do this anymore, you know. And I have to say something else, too. As time passes and goes on, I get several clients, straight wives, that, and I just really have to commend these couples, that will oftentimes, some of the gay husbands are seeking a therapist that can help them. And then, you know, if they feel like they can't do it themselves, they're seeking therapists to bring in the wife. And I think that's great. If you can't do it on your own, do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of options out there. You know, whatever suits your, you know, suits you, because it's not easy. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult to come to terms with this. But if you need help, there's lots of therapists out there and many communities that can help, you know, help you break this to your wife.
Mm-hmm.
So many of us wish we would have gotten.
Well, since I'm on my page of articles, I think if you don't mind, I'll read another one. And I'm hoping that there are gay men who are listening to this and hopefully they'll pay attention to some of these words. Or if your wives are listening, you can play this for your husband. Maybe it will give them some better insight. Now, this is a column I wrote. It's called Happy Anniversary, and it was back from September 1984. Wow. That was a long time ago. And
you don't keep the dates out on us, buddy. We're starting to sound old, okay?
Oh, my God. I know. I am old, Misty. You're not. I am. But, you know, I want you to be aware. These are all on my website at www.gayhusbands.com. And, of course, I haven't read them since I put it up 10 years ago. So I'm just hoping it doesn't say anything that's wrong. But let's check. It says, this column was written in September 1984. Although many years have passed, I think people can still understand the feelings. It says, this week marked the anniversary of my marriage, which took place 6 years ago. For the past 2 years, I've been separated from my gay husband. In remembrance of the occasion, this is an open letter to him and all the other gay husbands in similar situations. Dear Michael, this week is our six-year anniversary. Ironically, it's almost 2 years to the day since we separated and went our different ways. Although I try not to dwell on the horrors of the past, it is hard not to think about them sometimes, particularly on our special day. 6 years ago, when I walked down the aisle hand in hand with you to the music of Sunrise, Sunset, my head was filled with dreams about the little girl we would someday carry and our little boy at play. Of course, while I was conjuring up these images in my mind, you, as her father, were an integral part of the picture. It was never my intention to be a single mother raising our two children. I am sure that you had more fears on that day than I did because you were about to enter a world that was foreign to you. From your earliest exploits into sexuality, you were quite aware of your sexual preferences for men. We had run the gamut in the gay world, living life in the You had run the gamut of the gay world, living life in the fast lane for many years before we met. On that day, I suppose you were worried about how long you would be able to switch sides. And I guess you calmed your fears by figuring out that when you could no longer suppress your gay needs, you could at least juggle all the ends so I wouldn't find out. The truth is, you did a good job of it for a while. For a long time, I really believed that the increasing problems in our marriage were my fault. As he began to pull away from me in the bedroom, I started to doubt myself as a woman. As you continued to feed into those doubts instead of being honest, then I started catching you in lies. The secretive phone calls, the unexplained missing hours, the unexpected business appointments. But when I caught you in a lie, you lied your way out of it, causing me to doubt myself even more. You saturated our marriage with outsiders, hoping that if our life was complicated enough, there wouldn't be a chance to focus on our problem, rather your problem. You rejoiced at the birth of our daughter a year and a half later because you said it was a partial fulfillment of your lifelong dream, having children. For a few months after her birth, I really believed that we were becoming a cohesive family for the first time and naively put those nagging suspicions in the back of my mind. But it didn't take long for the big pull to return, and once again, everything other than my feelings were a priority in your life. By this time, I was getting closer to the truth, no matter how cleverly you kept trying to throw me off the track. And on that monumental night, when the truth smacked us both in the face head on, you continued to deny it and claim that I was making a big deal out of nothing. But by that time, it was too late. You slipped and said five or six words too many that caused my world to come crashing down around me. I was suffering and felt like I was coming apart piece by piece. You refused to allow me to go for professional help and threatened to divorce me if I did. I knew you were resisting because you didn't want anyone to know your secret, but it was at my expense. When I begged you to go for help with me, you told me that the solution to your little problem was to have another baby. If only you had a son, these feelings would go away. And I, who knew virtually nothing about homosexuality, other than the fact that it was destroying our marriage, needed to believe you. I loved you more than anything in the world and was desperate for us to become the American dream. We were blessed with a son the following year when I counted on it to be our own personal Messiah. He would be our marriage. He would save our marriage. He would make your problem go away. After all, your ultimate dream, a son, your namesake, had become a reality. Of course, having a son didn't do the trick, just like having a wife could never make you what you were not. Our communication deteriorated even further, and by this time you were out doing your own thing and leaving little clues around like a criminal who wanted to get caught. I knew the reason for our declining marriage, but you couldn't find the strength within yourself to be honest with me. When a couple lives a lie, there's not much to talk about, because how do you distinguish the truths from the falsehoods? During our 4 years together, you continued to shift the failure of our relationship to me. If only I was more supportive. If only I was more attractive. If only I wasn't so pushy in the bedroom. If only I was more understanding. 2 years have passed since the day we said goodbye, and I've learned much since that time. I now know that I was in no way responsible for your return to homosexuality during our marriage. You were gay, and even though you were able to suppress your needs temporarily, it's normal for you to return to the lifestyle that was yours long before you met me. Only after our separation were you able to be honest with me. You recently claimed you couldn't tell me the truth before we were married because chances are I wouldn't have married you. If you really loved me, I should have at least had that option. But what hurts even more were those hundreds of days after our marriage when you refused to confirm my suspicions, causing me to lose faith in myself. I started questioning my judgment about everything, including my ability to be a good wife to you and mother to our children. I never felt worthy enough, which drained me of my self-esteem as a human being. They say that time heals all wounds. Time and distance healed some of mine, but there are scars that will be left for years to come. Today we are closer than when we were living together. You have come to terms with yourself, and I have learned to accept you and your homosexuality. I can't live with you because no matter how accepting I've been of your world, I can never accept it as part of a marriage. However, there is a bond that strengthens as time moves on, the bond of friendship. So even though we will be spending our years apart, at least when we walk our children down the aisle, it will be hand in hand, just as we did 6 years ago. Happy anniversary.
Wow.
That was really sad, wasn't it?
That was. It was sad, but I think it was very honest and truthful, and I think that rings to a lot of women listeners tonight that have gone through this. So I think that is a timeless article that you have just written and read to us.
It really was. I think that most women can feel it. The only thing that I feel good about, not to feel selfish to all our other women, because you know that I love them, but I just feel good that I was able to get out early. Because my heart goes out to so many women who have been deceived for so many years and decades, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years. I mean, it took me years to recover from a short-term marriage and relationship. How do people recover after half of an adult lifetime living with someone filled with betrayal and suspicion and being put down and emotionally battered down? You know, my heart goes out to all the women who contact us or who come to our support chat, because, you know, I do feel your pain. And, of course, as I was telling one woman tonight in our support group, Misty, you know, it's never over when you have children. Even if I wasn't living apart, I still face so many of the problems that women face when they become single parents and their husbands are gay. And, you know, it's not like all of a sudden everything's back to okay. It's not okay. There's so many issues that women who have gay husbands have to work on that straight women with straight husbands don't have to deal with. And as you were saying earlier, a lot of times it's a matter that, you know, who do you tell? Who can you tell? If you live in areas, do you want people to find out? Now, like I say, I know that things have certainly improved over the last 30 years, and especially with AIDS. When that first came out, the world was going crazy against gay people back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, I could see why so many men were running back into the closet, because they really felt so persecuted, and if they could perform in a heterosexual way, you know, they were willing to do it. But, you know, now we're in the, you know, 2000s. And certainly the circumstances have changed and the fear of it has changed. you know, back in those early days, people had no clue how you would get AIDS. And so, you know, we were used to watching Dynasty with Rock Hudson kissing, you know, Linda Evans and being afraid that she was going to die from AIDS. People thought if you even, you know, had physical contact or touched someone, drank out of the same glass, you know, people had no knowledge. They thought they were going to come down with AIDS and die. They were so scared. And people were, at that point, going gay crazy. I mean, it was horrible in this country. And a lot of poor, innocent gay people were really taken advantage of. And I'm sure a lot of them did run into the closet in hopes of not having to have people find out that they were gay. But times are different today. You know, it's not, like I said, there's still a lot of homophobia around, but certainly far more greater acceptance of it. And we're not telling people you have to come out and be gay. You know, what you do in your own life is your business. The whole world doesn't have to know it. The important thing is that if you have any ideas or any inklings that you want to have sex with a man, then you should not be marrying a woman. I mean, it's that simple. You can have emotional feelings for a woman. You can like a woman. You can be best friends with a woman. But you definitely are not going to be the best husband for that woman. And I'll tell you something interesting, Misty. I had a conversation with my ex-husband yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, all these years later, 30-some years later, you know, we are very good friends. But, you know, he honestly didn't understand what gay was. And, you know, back in those days, you know, men would touch another man or fondle him or whatever the case, or even have, you know, oral sex. They didn't equate that with being gay. They thought it was just a sexual act because if they could love a woman and make love to a woman, and I think a lot of that's true today. We do have a caller. Let's see if somebody would like to join us. Hold on one moment. Hello, this is Bonnie and Misty. Are you there with us? Hello? Are you there with us, our caller? Well, maybe the caller's having a hard time getting in. Call back if you were in there and wanted to make a call. And if anybody else would like to make a call, please feel free to call us. I'll give you our number. It's area code 646-716-4893. Feel free to call us and tell us about your experience. But, you know, he was really insisting to me that when he got married, he really loved me, that even though he had some sexual experiences previously, they were nothing more than that. He never in his head, you know, wanted to think that he was gay. And I really believe that's true of a lot of these men, Misty. They really don't understand it. Let's see if our caller's back. Hello, can you hear us? Caller? Hello? Well, somehow our caller's having a hard time getting through tonight. Can you hear us at all? You may want to call back one more time. I'm really sorry, but you're not coming through. So try us again. Bye-bye. So, and I really believe that, you know, he really tried his best. He was hoping if he could love me enough, if he could have sex with me, that would turn him straight. That all those nagging feelings or the things he did in his past were his past, and now he was starting over with a new future. And in his heart, I think a lot of guys in their 20s are like this, or early 30s. They really do believe that they can overcome whatever those feelings are, but, you know, certainly it doesn't work. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that, and, you know, I completely agree with that, what you just said. I'm going to add to that just a little bit, if you don't mind. You know, my situation was very different in terms of I was dealing with a husband that was gay and experienced a lot of domestic violence from that as well. So I was dealing with two things in a marriage. And going back to what you said in terms of, I truly think he thought by marrying me, even though it was a terrible marriage in a lot of different ways, I truly think he thought he could suppress what was going on. I think he thought he could change himself. But you have to remember, I'm from a small town in eastern Kentucky. I don't know if you watched the Oprah show. The town I grew up in is very close to the place that Oprah visited in Williamson, West Virginia, where the guy in the small town had AIDS and jumped in the pool and they closed the pool down. I don't know if you caught that story or heard. Yes. So, I mean, that sets the type of things that was going on like in the 80s there. I mean, it was really scary, and I couldn't imagine that anyone would want to come out. And I couldn't imagine that anyone would have courage to even come out. So I truly think that he thought he could change this himself, even though, you know, we're not on good terms today for a variety of reasons, and mostly for just for the abuse reasons. No, it's not the gay issue. But I can see why people marry, especially coming from small towns where it's not probably not as safe to be who you really are, and that's sad. The only thing I can say is if you can, move to a place you are, because everybody deserves to live an authentic life. And as a result, him marrying me, it just caused more trouble for me and for him. It caused a lot of more issues. So it's just sad that things like that happen. And, you know, it does still happen today. So, you know, I have many, many gay friends, and I know they're gay, but, you know, like they keep it to themselves at workplaces and stuff like that. I completely understand that. But if you're married, it's like you just said, you really need to come to that wife and talk. It's going to be the hardest talk you ever have, but you really do. It's just the best thing to do for both of you. And it's the sooner the better, I believe, don't you, Bonnie?
Absolutely. You know, we know that secrets just kill the marriages, and that you always know when there's something wrong, but you never quite know why it is. And so many of our own women just sit and internalize this pain, thinking that they're doing something wrong because they can never, you know, satisfy their husbands, or their husbands aren't happy. And even though these men really think that they're pulling it off and living, you know, like I hear a lot of men say, well, I've been a good husband to you. What is a good husband? I mean, a husband who's not really there emotionally but just there physically, or they think because, you know, they're paying the mortgage payment, this makes them a good husband. And this has nothing to do with what marriage is about. I mean, this is a caretaker. It's not a husband. And marriage is built on so many different levels. But certainly being with someone who doesn't want you physically, emotionally, or mentally really does take its damage on you. I have one more short article to read from my website. And if any of you would like to see these articles, they're on my website at www.gayhusbands.com under articles. I think this one's good too, Misty. It's called Why Not to Get Married If You're Gay. And it says, if you are a gay man reading this and you're considering marriage somewhere down the road, let me beg of you, not ask, but beg, don't. I'm quite aware of the reasons that gay men have for getting married, but trust me, no matter how legitimate and idealistic these reasons may seem, you will in almost all cases be sorry in the end. This may sound like a strong generalization, but it is backed up with solid testimonies by the overwhelming majority of people who find themselves in this situation. As a woman who found herself quite surprisingly, or shall I say shockingly, married to a gay man, I can attest to the pain and anguish that all of the parties in this kind of marriage suffer, the straight wife, the gay husband, the children, and relatives. Even couples that may be aware of the husband's homosexuality prior to marriage end up unhappy because of the lack of understanding on the straight wife's part about what homosexuality is. I have come to learn why gay men want to get married and like to share some of the most common reasons with you. First, we are living in a far more liberal society than 20 years ago, but is still basically homophobic in spite of all the breakthroughs. In most quarters, homosexuality is still viewed as a distortion or perversion, and realistically speaking, this attitude will be around longer than we will. But because of this, many gay people who feel out of place in the gay world have the need to feel they belong in the heterosexual one. And what better way than to marry? They are convinced that marriage will be a miraculous cure, as if homosexuality is a disease that can go away. This is not the case. What does happen in almost every marriage is that the husband goes through years of torture, trying to be part of a world where he can never feel totally comfortable. The frustrations that come about from the suppression of his sexuality or the lies he needs to keep covering compel him to resent his wife and children. He views his family as a mirror, reflecting his own guilt of living his lie. Another frequent reason stated as a rationale for marriage is to have children. I feel that is the most absurd and selfish reason of all. What it essentially means is that the wife is being used as a breeding farm to produce offspring. Eventually, when the marriage falls apart, the wife usually ends up raising the children. Often, she is not able to deal with the homosexual world or her anger from the failed marriage and attempts to thwart a relationship between the children and the gay father, leading to more misery on everyone's part, especially the child's. No doubt there are some gay men who are ideal parents, in some cases better than their wives are. But there has to be another way to bring children into your life that will not be at the expense of an innocent bystander. Adoption is a viable alternative that should be considered. Often gay men who wed claim they are not aware or in denial of their sexuality at the time of their marriages. However, it seems that in almost all of these instances, the person knew that there was something different about his sexuality for a long period of time. The most logical answer for someone in this position is to give yourself time to know who you are and to come to terms with your true sexual orientation before running off to the altar. And if you are still insistent on marrying, even when there is a past or doubt in your mind about the present, then it is of utmost importance to tell your straight partner the truth, regardless of the consequences that may follow. She must be given the option of going into a marriage without blinders on. If the woman still wants to get married after learning this fact, it is vitally important for both of you to go for some kind of counseling to either professionals or support groups that can explain the realities and drawbacks of the situation. If all of this sounds discouraging, well, it's meant to be. But better to be disappointed now than devastated for a lifetime. And that's the end of that one.
Wow, that's another classic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I say, even though this stuff was written long ago, you know, it's still a matter that is still really relevant today, I think.
I believe so, too.
You know, the years have passed, but it's still the same emotions, still same feelings, and same problems around the world. So one of the things we really wanted to do tonight, now that I've depressed everybody, Misty, or let every woman know that she's not crazy, because we all feel this way, we wanted to really talk a little bit about the issue of self-esteem, and I know that you're really big on building self-esteem.
I am. It's one of the, I think, the key building blocks to returning back to yourself, coming home to who you are. It's such a key. It's such a major factor. And when you build the self-esteem, I think, and another thing, I do believe self-esteem and self-love are so related. It's hard to untangle the two, because either one will start filling you up and rebuilding. So I think both of those are so important.
So Misty, when you said that before, I did, you know, bring up an issue to me. When you're saying it will bring you back to where you once were, the sad part is I think that we have found so many of our women who before their marriages had a problem with self-esteem issues. And many times that's how they end up in marriages that are really not the right marriages. Even if you don't know that gay is the problem, you know that there's something not quite right. But, you know, because you have your own self-esteem issues, you're willing to overlook things or think, well, no, I'm not perfect. How am I going to find someone who's perfect? Or, you know, the fact that somebody wants me, I should be happy about that. Wouldn't you say so?
I think it's a very good point. So I should add to that and say, bring you back to who you were or who you wish to be, or
right,
even who you're meant to be.
Exactly.
Maybe who you're meant to be, because you're right. Some of us do come out, some of the women, you know, they'll reflect back, and when, you know, she and I are working together, they'll reflect back. That's one of the questions I ask, you know, have you had good self-esteem in the past? Because if you have had it in the past, you know, we'll draw on things like that. We'll pull up those strengths and see what you were doing through, you know, just some different questioning process and go through that. But there are some women that say, oh, I can't remember a time. And I'm finding several women now, because, you know, spirituality is becoming such a hot topic in our society these days, because I think we're a self-help society, and then we read, you know, great books like Eat, Pray, Love and all those things that guides us to be spiritual. And I'm finding many of the women coming to me that have married later in life have had good self-esteem. but still have had this happen. So, you know, it's every, there's so many different backgrounds to come to this point.
Right, but even if you had good self-esteem when you were going into it, it certainly did a lot to knock you down while you were in it, correct?
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. Absolutely so. I mean, it does what I call, this is part of what I call dancing inside the circle of crazy, because you sense something that's wrong. And we women, and as a wife, we just love to fix things. So we even alter who we are, which is not a good thing, but we even alter who we are to try to become something we think they want, when oftentimes we don't even know what the real issue is. And we can't become a man. Sometimes that's what it is. You know, we can't become everything they want, and we just change who we are. It's like, you know, okay, well, you know, some of the women, well, if I get a breast implant, he will love me more. If I lose weight, he will love me more. If I gain weight, he will love me more. If I keep the house cleaner, he will love me more. I mean, these are all things that I've heard from women I work with. And when you keep doing that, rather than accepting yourself for who you are, you just continue to dance inside that circle of crazy and alter who you are. And what
that
does...
While we're on this subject, let's just see if we can get our caller in. Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Caller?
Hello.
Are you with us? Hi, you're with Bonnie and Misty.
Hi, this is Maggie.
Hi, Maggie. We're so glad to hear from you. It's been a while.
It has.
And Maggie, you're one of our favorite callers because you always shed some wonderful insight for us.
Well, thank you.
How are you, Maggie? How have things been changing since you were last with us?
I'm moving right along, slowly but surely, still, you know, dealing with how slowly the legal system works, but having you tell me that I'm one of your favorite callers was a great boost to my self-esteem right now.
Oh, good.
Since we're on the subject of self-esteem. I was listening to you talking earlier, and that's been a big issue with me is self-esteem. I had a very low opinion of myself to begin with and had sort of struggled with that throughout my whole marriage, which was over 35 years, and was finally getting to a point where I had sort of found myself. I had figured out who I was and what I wanted to do when I grew up, and mm-hmm. and then I found out I had a gay husband, and found out through some things of his that I read that when he would have sex with me, he would imagine that I was a man, so that he would be able to perform. Now that does a real number on your self-esteem. So you know, the self-esteem that I had worked for so long to build up, you know, just plummeted right back down to the bottom again.
What
and
kind of relationship did you have before you got married, Maggie?
What kind of relationship did I have with
him? Yeah, were you with him together for a while? Did you have a long period of knowing each other?
Well, we knew each other for several years before we were married. We were engaged for about a year and a half while we were in college.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that tipped you off that something wasn't quite right?
No, and I have spent the last year and a half, you know, looking back, you know, trying to see if there was ever anything that should have tipped me off. And, you know, I'm married to the man who should win the Academy Award next year because he was certainly a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Just never had any clue at all.
So, did you feel that he was warm? Was he emotional with you? Or did you feel maybe that's just not his nature?
Well, it's funny. After all of this happened, you know, when I found out that he was gay and you know, I moved out of the house and filed for divorce and you know, he told our children that he was gay. And one of my sons came to me and he said, you know, Mom, he said, I never really saw you and Dad being very affectionate.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I just thought that's the way y'all were. He said, you know, some people, you know, they hang all over each other when they're in public. You know, you just want to yell at them, you know, go get a room. And he said, you know, other people are, you know, more private with their emotions. And he said, that's just the way I thought you and Dad were.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me really stop and think that, you know, no, you know, we were not, you know, openly emotional in public. And some of that it was me, because I'm just a very private type of person, a very introverted, more, you know, internal type person, you know. So, you know, I don't like public, you know, big public displays of affection. Let me ask you this.
You come from the South. You can tell by your accent. And did you come from a religious family?
Mine, not so much. We went to church. A little bit when I was young. We started going back to church when I was in high school. And then I was a pretty regular church goer when I was in college. My husband was raised in the church. His father was a minister.
So have you dated much before you met him?
Not a whole lot. I did not date at all in high school. The first date I ever had was in college. So I was not very
experienced. You didn't have a lot of experience to draw from, right?
Oh, not a lot of experience at all to draw from.
Now, did he seem like really sexually desirous of you during your courting period?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I thought he was attracted to me, and I was attracted to him, you know, in a sexual manner. And, you know, I just thought everything was, quote-unquote, normal in that department.
Mm-hmm. So, because a lot of times I think one of the problems, since, you know, you were married over 30 years ago, you know, certainly the same time frame that I was back in, the, you know, the 70s, you know, in that time frame, a lot of times women really didn't have a lot of experience because of personal beliefs or religious beliefs. So
right, I was one of those, quote-unquote, good girls who was going to, you know, wait marriage and...
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way I was raised. I mean, that's just kind of the way, you know, the way it was in the South, you know, those many years ago, you know.
So there would have been nothing to make you think this was unusual, because that's pretty much the way people were, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, that was just, you know, that's just the way I was raised.
Mm-hmm. And you did have children as a result of the marriage, so obviously you did have relationships with him. Do they continue years, or?
Yeah, everything seemed to be pretty good up until about 5 or 6 years ago, and I thought it was just a situation of him having erectile dysfunction, and, you know, he tried Viagra, and that didn't seem to work, and I was trying to be the very understanding wife and not put pressure on him to perform. If that was a problem, then I thought, okay, you know, we'll just deal with this. And I thought, you know, he wasn't trying to initiate sex because he didn't want to try and fail.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found out was that was about the time that he really started acting on his gay urges, and, you know, he didn't have erectile problems at all. As a matter of fact, you know, he was regularly getting prescriptions for daily Cialis. And, you know, as long as it was a person of the same sex as him, opposite sex for me, he didn't have any performance problems at all.
Now, were you totally blindsided by this?
Completely blindsided. Just completely blindsided by it, which... You know, again, it was a huge, huge hit to the self-esteem.
Well, I bet it was. And did he ever give you an explanation?
Well, he said it was something that he had struggled with all of his life. As it turns out, that period of time where we stopped having sex, he had been seeing a therapist,
mm-hmm.
Actually about the homosexuality issue, because he, you know, he was just finding it harder and harder to suppress it. And supposedly, from what he told me, this psychologist basically said, no, I really don't think you're gay. I think you just need to go home and have sex with your wife and everything will be okay. Well, because he had had one sexual encounter with a gay man, he did go to a clinic and have himself tested for sexually transmitted diseases. I will give him credit for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And came home, and we had a little romantic weekend,
internet.
and it was a disaster. I mean, you know, I can remember that he just was not able to perform, and he told me, he said, you know, after that night, he said, at that point, I knew that I was gay.
Hmm.
But unfortunately, he didn't tell me.
I think what's so important, and maybe you could shed some insight. How long were you married when this happened?
When that happened, it would have been about the 30-year mark.
So, and really in your heart believe that he hadn't really acted on them, right?
Yeah, I think he may have had a couple of experimental
encounters,
maybe in high school and college, but you know, everything that I know kind of leads me to think that he really suppressed it. You know, I mean, he was looking at gay porn and that sort of thing and masturbating a lot. But I really think that up until about, you know, 5 years ago or so, I don't think he was acting on it, you know, at least not with any regularity. And then once he did, it was like, you know, opening Pandora's box.
Then he never stopped, right?
Oh, yeah, he never stopped. It was just, you know.
Making up for 30 years, right?
Yeah, I tell people he literally screwed his way from coast to coast. He traveled
mm-hmm.
a lot on business, and he used an internet hookup site. And wherever he would travel on business, he'd get on that website and he'd find somebody. He would invite total strangers to his hotel room. And I just, for the life of me, I cannot imagine why somebody would engage in that kind of dangerous and promiscuous behavior. I mean, that's just stupid, you know.
I think it maybe becomes like an addiction.
I really think
where they just want to have more and more.
I think it was, yeah. Once that box, once Pandora's box had been opened, it was like, you know, like a kid in a candy store. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he just, you know, and I could see the escalation of the behavior over the years. And then even, you know, once I found out what was going on, you know, it was a couple of months before I confronted him, because I had to come up with a plan. I had to
mm-hmm.
sort of situate myself financially. I had to hire an attorney. I started seeing a therapist. And just in that, with about a six-month period, I could see escalation of the behavior in that six-month period to the point where, I mean, he would come and, you know, stand across the room from me and look at me and say, you know, I'm going to go fishing, when I knew for a fact, or would find out, you know, afterwards, that he didn't go fishing. He went to meet a man at a motel for sex.
Maggie, let me ask you this. When all this was happening, you know, a few years ago, did you wake up thinking to yourself, I don't understand this. This makes no sense at all. How can a man that I've been married to all these years, all of a sudden, this has happened?
Yeah, I mean, I was just so confused and so dumbfounded, and the one question I never asked myself was, what did I do to deserve this? Because I knew I'd never done anything to deserve it, but I did, and I still to this day ask the question, why did this happen to me?
Mm-hmm. And what about your children? Do you think they knew what was going on?
Actually, my kids probably knew a lot more than I did. I have a son in his 30s, and when he was in his teens, he found gay porn hidden in the garage.
Wow.
And so he had suspected for, you know, for half of his life that his father was gay. But, you know, I mean, that's not the kind of thing.
Did he ever confront his dad about it?
Never did. He never did. He never said anything to his dad. He never said anything to me. And so once his dad called him up and said, you know, well, your mom and I are getting a divorce because we've grown apart, which, you know, I mean, he wouldn't even be honest to begin with his kids. And then, you know, so to kind of give you a little chronology, you know, he called the kids and said, your mom and I are getting a divorce because, you know, we've grown apart. You know, the nest is empty. You guys are gone. You know, we've just developed different interests. And then, you know, about a month or so after that, we went to mediation. And at mediation, I got slapped with a gag order that said I couldn't talk to anybody and tell anybody anything about why I was getting divorced. And so I told my children, I said, you know, I really had hoped I could talk to you about this, but now I can't. And when that happened, I found out my children started calling and texting each other, and my older son, you know, was the one who said, you know, look, I found gay porn, you know, when I was, you know, in my teenage years, and so I think Dad's gay. And then about, oh, I guess 2 months after that, he actually did sit down with the kids individually and admit that he was gay. Now, I don't think he's ever admitted to the years and years of promiscuity, but he did tell them that he was gay and that it was something that he had struggled with. And you know, I mean, our family has always been you know, pro-gay rights. And, you know, I mean, I think gays should have the same rights as everybody else. They just, you know, shouldn't screw up somebody else's life to do it, you know. It puts me sometimes at odds with my own, you know, my own beliefs and feelings. You know, I'm in favor of gay rights, but don't give somebody's same-sex partner something that you don't let me have because I divorced the man because he's gay, if that makes sense. So it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, put us all in a very awkward position. You know, I can't talk to my children about it. We sort of tiptoe around the whole issue. And
now, do you think your other son knew about it?
I don't think he did. I don't think. As a matter of fact, when his brother said, you know, I think Dad's gay, you know, he was a little bit reluctant to accept that. You know, oh no, I don't think that's it. And then, you know, his brother, you know, just, you know, told him some other things and eventually they, you know, they both kind of came to the conclusion on their own. And then, as I said, about 2 months later, that their dad did come out, you know, to them and say, yeah, you know, you're gay and that's why your mother and I are getting a divorce.
Now, I know that you can't really directly talk to them about it, but how do you think they're accepting it?
I think they accept the fact that their father is gay because, you know, I mean, they've always believed that gay is the way you are. It's not anything you can change.
Now, that's unusual, I think, coming from someone from the South who's involved in the church. Is that the feeling of the church, or was that just your personal family feeling?
Well, that was our personal feeling. And we actually had moved away from the denomination that my husband was raised in and moved to a little more moderate religious affiliation, and then in that affiliation, there's a lot of, you know, dissension, you know, with anything. But, you know, it was just our personal feeling that, you know, gay is the way you are. It's the way you're born. And so, you know, my kids, you know, they understand that, you know, that their dad didn't choose to be that way, and that it's not anything that he could change. Of course, that, you know, like I said, they don't know anything about the adultery, and there's not, you know, and I can't talk to them about it.
Yeah.
yet. I mean, I have to believe that, you know, truth eventually has a way of coming out. And, you know, one of these days, you know, the truth will be out there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that eventually I think these secrets do come out, I think.
Well, he has a live-in boyfriend now, and so I think it's going to be very difficult for the kids to visit and ignore the man, you know, the elephant in the room, so to speak. So I think they'll have questions about, you know, why is somebody else living here now?
So as far as your own self-esteem, what are some of the steps you've taken to rebuild it?
Well, for one thing, I started seeing a therapist. I was a little bit reluctant at first, but I had a couple of good friends who just kept drumming it into me that, you know, I really needed to do this, to see a therapist, and have so that I had somebody that I could talk to freely. I've read, you know, some books, you know, and internet articles on things. I saw a woman speak last year, and to her, she's written a book called Throw Out 50 Things, and it's a lot of it is about simplifying your life, and one of the things that she talked about was having a power song that represents who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, that was a really good idea. And so my power song is Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so,
that Misty is a very big proponent of everybody having a personal song, aren't you, Misty?
I certainly am. That's always helpful, especially, you know, music, for the people that know me, you know, I'm certified in expressive arts therapy as well, and music is a form of expressive art therapy, so either you make your own music or pick out music to listen to. It's very, very therapeutic qualities. So if you're down in the dumps and you want to change the pace a bit, pick out, you know, have a playlist of 4 or 5 pieces of music that really lift your spirits and make you feel good, make you feel strong, make you feel like you have courage. So yes, songs are very important. Music can really help alter the mood in a good or bad way. So choose those upbeat songs when you're feeling down and you want to fill up.
Right. Well, I think everybody needs a theme song, because the last thing I want to listen when I'm down is to the song like Alone Again Naturally or Never Gonna Fall in Love Again. But
yeah.
I think we all need an upbeat kind of, you know, I remember a few years ago, I don't know if you're old enough to remember Misty Allie McBeal.
Yes,
remember that show?
I do remember that show. I do.
I love that show. And I know it was a little kooky and a little fluky. Maggie, did you ever see that show?
Actually, I never watched it, no.
Well, you can get it now on Netflix. And, you know, I got the bootleg copies before they came out on Netflix, because I just love that show. It's a story about Allie McBeal, who is a lawyer, who, like I say, that whole team was really kooky and fluky. It's a comedy drama kind of law show, and, you know, just so great. But she had a therapist played by Tracy Ullman, who's also very kooky and fluky.
Yeah, Tracy Ullman is.
Remember Tracy Ullman. And Tracy,
oh, yeah.
You know, from the minute she walked into her office, because Allie McBeal was always having love relationship problems, and she started telling her, you have to have a theme song, you know, that you have in your head, so that when you're feeling down, you need to really, you know, pick it up. And it was really interesting, you know, how everybody in that show developed their own theme song. But, you know, something cheerful and something to make you feel really good or crazy or just, you know, break you out of your mood. So I think it's great what you've done, Maggie, as far as, you know, I Will Survive. I think that's really the theme song of so many women with all kinds of issues with, you know, relationships. But it's really true that, you know, you will survive. You know, your life will go on. This is not the end of the world. And, boy, if anybody should have felt like it was the end of the world, it was you. I mean, you spent over 30 years in a marriage to someone who had no clue.
Yeah, there were times when I wondered if, you know, if I could make it, you know, to tomorrow. And I just had to learn to take it, you know, day by day, sometimes, you know, hour by hour, just to get through. And something else that someone else clued me into was meditation. I managed to find some websites that had some free downloads with meditation, either just music or like guided meditations, just for relaxation, because, you know, this definitely puts you in a very, you know, physically and emotionally stressful state. And I've started taking a yoga class.
That's excellent.
That's you know, that is not only, you know, is relaxing, but, you know, it's good physically too. It helps to, you know, strengthen your core muscles and all of that sort of thing, and helps with your flexibility.
Right, want to try all different things, whether it's, you know, yoga, Tai Chi is another really good way to, you know, do something similar to yoga. And also exercise. A lot of women take up exercise.
Right.
Go back to school, take new classes. Have you done any of that?
Haven't done any of that. Well, other than having, I became part of enrolled in a divorce recovery group,
mm-hmm.
And then as a result of my involvement with that, I've actually become a facilitator in that group. So I facilitate at the lower level of the group, while I'm still a participant at the upper level. You know, so I'm still working on me, but I'm also reaching out and trying to help, you know, other women who are going through, well, men and women who are going through divorce, and you know, when you're helping other people, that, you know, that kind of takes your focus off yourself.
Well, I think it also helps to build your self-esteem, because every kind of positive feedback that you get, and I really do believe that helping is the biggest way to, you know, improve your self-esteem. I know it always makes me feel great when I get notes from women thanking me or, you know, telling me how much I've changed their lives. But I was just curious, you mentioned about the divorce mediation. Do you find there's a lot of situations that are similar or different between straight marriages and straight gay marriages?
In terms of the divorce?
Of the emotional impact. Or do you feel it's pretty similar?
I don't know. I think maybe the straight gay marriage may have a slightly more devastating effect, not to diminish the devastation of divorce between,
mm-hmm.
you know, a straight couple. But and this was something I was talking about recently with a woman in divorce group. Because she was saying, you know, how are you able to just turn off the love for your husband? She said, you know, my husband's cheated on me. He's told me he doesn't love me anymore, but I still love him. And
uh-huh.
because I don't love my husband anymore. And I think it's, you know, maybe it's just my particular situation. You know, when you find out that you've been lied to from the get-go, when you've been cheated on, you know, when he's had men in the bed that you shared with him, you know, when he's, you know, like I said, lied to your face and said, I'm doing one thing, when he's actually going out and having sex with a man, when he reneges on agreements that you've made, when he stands in front of you and calls you a vindictive bitch, and then threatens to kill himself because he doesn't think he can afford to pay your alimony, it's really easy to turn the love off at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and again, you know, I read in an email that he had written where he said, I used to imagine that my wife was a man, you know, so that I could perform sexually. You know, when you put all of that together, it made it very easy for me to turn the love off.
I think it's a different feeling. It's a different sense of betrayal. Because when you have a straight marriage that dissolves, I mean, yes, there are feelings of betrayal, that you're upset, it didn't work out. But when you're married to a gay man, you feel that not only was there a betrayal as far as the, you know, sexuality in the relationship, but the whole relationship was, you know, built on a lie. Do you agree with
right.
that?
Right, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The whole thing's built on a lie. And, I mean, if he'd been cheating with another woman, I could have competed with that. You know, Mitch was saying earlier, you know, if I'd kept the house cleaner, or if I lost weight, or if I gained weight, or if I did this, or if I did that, maybe I could have competed with another woman. I can't compete with another man. I can't grow a penis, you know. So it was, you know, I felt like, you know, there was no other option, you know.
I also think that the dynamics of gay men are very different than straight men, because the fact that they're living a lie every day, I think it becomes very inherent in their personalities that, you know, they just feel they need to lie all the time. So you really never can distinguish between what's really true and not true. And you always have that.
He was very, very good at lying. Very good at lying. One thing that I wanted to touch base on, you were talking about how you get letters from women who talk about how they've helped you. In my filing cabinet, I have a manila folder, and on the folder tab, it says validation file. And when I get a card from somebody that, you know, just, you know, tells me how, like I got a card from my sister that told me how proud she was of me for how well I'd handled everything. And I've gotten cards from other people that I've dealt with. I stick them in that validation file. And, you know, when you get down, pull that file out and go through it and look at those things, the nice things that people have said about you.
I'd like to add to that a little bit, Maggie. Mm-hmm. Some of the women I work with, we do that, except I don't call it a validation file. What we do, we work on what I call a blessing box. And basically, you just find something really pretty to keep these little things in so that you can get to them easy. Some type of little box type container. It doesn't have to be anything extravagant, but something special enough to put those things in so they're easy access. And by all means, get those things out to remind yourself. Anytime someone says something nice about you, write it down. Put it on a piece of paper or a note card and put it in that little box. Or if it's a card, put it in the box. All those things are tools to help you feel better about yourself and to remind yourself you're a great person.
And I think that's really true, because tonight we never really got to our topic of building self-esteem, which is fine. We can always make that next week. But the important thing is that every little step you take to feel better about yourself, and I really do love that name, validation folder or file, and I also love blessing box. But no matter how you keep it, whether it's in a box or in a file, I know for me that, you know, we all have days when we start doubting ourselves or feeling bad about ourselves. And it's really important to try to get off that track by finding something that's going to build us up and make us realize that, you know, we are great women, that we've done so much. And, in fact, I'm just going to mention a couple things, and you can both give me your feedback on this article that I have for building self-esteem. And it's called Building High Self-Esteem, and it says that building high self-esteem is one of the most important goals you can strive toward. Having healthy self-respect enables you to remain positive and deal with whatever challenges life puts in front of you. Excuse me. When you're thinking of building high self-esteem, you may be concerned that you might be too full of yourself, overconfident, or arrogant, but having high self-esteem and being arrogant are not the same thing. People with high self-esteem have the following characteristics. They have confidence in their ability to meet the day-to-day challenges. They don't spend a lot of time worrying about what people think of them. They don't have a need to put down other people. They are able to learn from their mistakes. They are able to laugh at themselves. They are able to take criticism without being devastated or crippled by it. They're not afraid of failure. Building high self-esteem is a gradual process that will take time. The ultimate goal is unlimited confidence in your own ability to handle all situations. So here are some ways that they suggest, and let me ask your input from both of you on this. The first one is picture yourself succeeding. Whatever challenge you're trying to face, work on believing you will succeed. Being successful always doesn't happen with the first burst of effort. Imagine yourself attaining your goals and keep reminding yourself that you won't don't lose unless you quit. What do you both think of that one?
Oh, I agree completely. Visualization.
Yeah, I think visualization on where you want to be. The next one I think is the most important one, which is the hardest one for, I know that our women have the hardest time dealing with, and I think it really took me a long time to deal with this too. It says love yourself. Low self-esteem often comes about by being other-focused. If you are looking for approval from someone else and they won't give it to you, you can't win. If instead you offer yourself love and approval no matter what, then you win no matter what the outcome of any given event. How do you feel about that?
This is Missy. I absolutely believe that everything starts with love and self-love. Self-love is so important. You have to learn to love yourself. Is it easy? No. It's a little more difficult when you've gone through a gay straight marriage, but is it possible? Absolutely. I think it's so important. And like I said earlier, self-love and building self-esteem is so entangled together. If you do one, it's going to spill into the other. Both will benefit. That's my opinion and what I've seen with the women I work with.
I agree with that too. Yeah.
I think this one's important. This is kind of based. This is kind of reinforcing what Maggie said. Notice what you do right on a daily basis. Each night before you go to bed, think about what you did right that day. You can either do this on paper or mentally, but this is a habit that is one of the key methods of building high self-esteem. What do you think of that one?
Absolutely. That's a great tip.
One of the things when you were giving the list about, you know, what self-esteem is, and it talked about learning from your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've made mistakes over the past year, but I've learned from them. And you know, and I try to remember, you know, what I've done right over the last year. I've moved out of my house about a year ago, and so it's been just about a year that I've, you know, now that I've been living on my own. I handle my own finances. I handle, you know, I pay my own bills, do my own taxes, you know, all that kind of stuff. I had a fender bender last winter. It wasn't my fault. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had to deal with the insurance company. I had to deal with the body shop. I had to deal with the car rental place. I had to do it all. And it all got done. And I was very proud of myself for having done that. I had to have surgery in August. It wasn't anything major. It was a little outpatient procedure on my foot. But, you know, I dealt with it. I got a friend to take me to the surgery center. She came back. You know, she's been going through a divorce situation, too. So, you know, even though we don't have the gay issue, you know, we both have the adultery issue. And we identify, you know, on a lot of levels with that. You know, she stayed with me and helped me. You know, I took care of things. You know, I do.
And don't you think that every step you've taken has really helped in building your self-esteem? You know, things that you now can do for yourself that maybe before you wouldn't have thought to do for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I've never paid bills in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never worried about balancing the checkbook. You know, I mean, I made sure I didn't overdraw the checkbook, but, you know, I've never reconciled it and all that kind of stuff. I do that all now. I do it by myself.
Yeah, I give you a lot of credit for that, Maggie, because I've been on my own for almost 30 years, and I still don't do that, so that's really good. I'll have to get lessons from you.
Well, there's software out there that helps.
That's all right. I don't think I want to know. But the next item on here is just exactly what you said. It says, learn from your mistakes. A person with low self-esteem is crippled by their mistakes. Every mistake is an opportunity to learn something and to choose to do something differently the next time around. Make it a point to find the lesson in each loss and move on. Isn't that good?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, the first time you put a red sock in with your white underwear and you end up with pink underwear, you learn. You
mm-hmm.
know, don't put the red socks in there. And so, yeah, I you know, I've made mistakes. I've spent money that I shouldn't have spent. You know, I've, you know, done things I shouldn't have done, but, you know, I like to think that I've learned from it and, you know, and you know, put that in the in the, you know, life experience file that I can draw from in the future.
Mm-hmm. And here it says that, you know, here's just some little tips for people who are listening in about some little things that you can do, like talk about, make some lists. And I know that our guest, Wendy, who comes on, she's really great at lists. But here it's five strengths you have. For instance, you know, friendliness, patience, courage, traits like that. Five things to admire in yourself, raising a happy, healthy child, your good relationship with a sibling. The five greatest achievements in your life, graduating high school, parenting a child, and so on. And at least 20 things you know how to do. These can be simple, like baking a cake, or complicated, like speaking French. But I think that these are all, you know, positive things that you have to reinforce in yourself to make you realize that you have the ability, you know, to do productive things on your own. And every little task that you do has to be a self-esteem raiser. Would you both think so?
Yes, I think so, absolutely. Every little, and the tasks that you complete that are simple are also so important, and I like to remind straight wives of that. The simple things will also get you there that are small, because all that's important, too, and each time you complete a task that's simple, it can help build upon your self-esteem and make you feel stronger. Whereas if you shoot for something outrageously hard, you may set yourself up for failure, and you don't want to do that when you're down.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
It's like that old line about, you know, how do you eat an elephant, you know, one bite at a time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You just, you know, every little thing, all the little things add up to big things. You know, even, like you said, even, you know, make your list of things that you can do. You know, baking a cake might sound insignificant, but when you add baking a cake and being able to do something else and paying your bills and, you know, taking care of your, you know, insurance. And I had a situation where the apartment above me flooded. And so I had water running, you know, down into my apartment. And, you know, I dealt with it, you know, because for one thing, I had to. You know, sometimes
mm-hmm.
you get in positions where, you know, you have to deal with things. You don't have any choice anymore, you know, because you're the only one there to do it.
And you can be amazed at the inner strength you can find when you have to find it.
Absolutely. I have a backbone that I never knew I had before. It was there. I just didn't know I had it. And it took this to bring it out and make me realize.
Well, that's another thing I just wanted to end our show with. In spite of all the tragedy that you faced in the last few years, and your story is just so compelling, Maggie, and I really do appreciate your coming on and sharing it with our listeners every now and then, and hopefully you'll come back more often. But do you feel that your life moving ahead has been something really validating for you, you know, that it's put you to new places that you never thought you would have gone otherwise?
I do. I think it's forced me to, you know, to realize weaknesses within myself and do something to correct that.
Mm-hmm.
See the strengths that I have. And I think that, you know, overall, you know, when the dust has settled, I'm going to be in a good place, and I'm going to be very happy in that good place. And I don't think I'm going to have any regrets about having moved in that direction.
Well, we want to thank our guest, Maggie, so much. Maggie, promise us you'll come back sooner than later.
I will.
Your story is always so inspiring. And if any of you need information, you can go to my website at www.gayhusbands.com or go to Misty's website at www.mistyhall.com. And if you'd like to get my newsletters that come out every month, one's coming up next week, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And also, please keep in mind that we're having our great get-together in just a few weeks in Florida, and there's still time if you'd like to join us. So, Misty and Maggie, I'd like to say goodnight to both of you. And, Maggie, thank you for always enlightening our show. And
you're welcome.
and making it more lively and interesting. We always appreciate your feedback. And we'll be seeing and talking to all of our women next week. Please join us again on the Straight Wives Talk Show next Sunday night at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Misty?
Yes, I'd like to wish a quick happy Thanksgiving to our Canadian straight wives. Tomorrow, I think, is the official day. And good night and love to all.
All right, good night.
Bye-bye.